Well, did you get more snow this week, Jimmy?
No. Good. It's been a little brisk, but it's definitely turning into spring. And the grass is probably going to be need to be cut soon. So that's exciting.
I had to mow for the first time the other day at the farm. And it was like, I probably should have mowed about a week earlier. You know, it was just long enough that, man, I'm having to go slow to get it all cut. But yeah, it's like 70 degrees here, man. It is full spring.
It was a beautiful day yesterday. I was out at the sawmill. I've been digging into the sawmill. It's funny when somebody gives you a sawmill, thank you, to log the saw.
You know how that happens.
Yeah, somebody gives you a sawmill.
And you can all relate.
There was no instructions whatsoever. So you watch a couple of videos and you're like, do I cut it here? It's just, I don't know. When do I flip it? What? I don't know. But three trees fell this spring, and it turned those three trees into the logs I'm going to use to do the porch poles. And me and Mike have been cutting up the logs. And yesterday's video, I put up on Instagram three videos of me cutting up logs. But nobody would notice this, but the progress, that last log we cut up yesterday, the last two logs we cut up yesterday, it was like a breeze. Like, I looked at Mike, this is actually finally enjoyable. He goes, yeah, I'm liking this. Because the previous 2 days were like, I don't know how to flip the log. I'm like, every control, no matter what I think, is the wrong way. And I'm like, okay, let me think. And so I said to Mike, go ahead, you do it. And he's like, because you're looking at all the hydraulic levers, and unless you're used to it, you want up is down is up, left is right is left. Not necessarily, but until you understand how the levers go. It's like, if you ever seen anybody sit inside of a backhoe for the first time, I guess you would have only seen that in my backyard, where like, you don't know what any of the levers do. And it's the same thing on the sawmill. So you're trying to flip a log and everything is backwards. You tighten it, you loosen it. It's crazy. But I'm finally getting the flow. Like, at the controls, I'm starting to expect what happens without having to stare at them and go, okay, what do I need to do next? And then yesterday we changed the blade. We put on a new carbide tip blade, and what a breeze. I even said it in my last comment how it went from struggling. Every time the blade hit a knot, it would dip and come back up. So my boards, you look down at them, every time there's a knot, the blade would bury. Put the carbide tip blade on it, and it is dead flat. The cut is dead
flat. Like butter.
Yeah, like butter.
So how long are those blades going to last? I mean, that's pretty new.
How do I know how long the blade will last?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it's a relatively new blade. You haven't cut that much stuff on the sawmill yet, have you?
No, but if the blade gets hot, if I don't have enough water blowing on the blade, there's a lot of variables.
Gotcha.
And also, a couple times I didn't have a tension correctly, so the blade was too loose, so it would dip because it wasn't tight enough. And I put on the non-carbide tip blade. I guess they're just showing a variety. Like Mike said, why would anybody buy anything but a carbide tip? It might be expensive. I don't know. If you're only going to cut hardwoods, if you're going to cut softwoods, I don't know those variables yet. But you end up with a lot of scrap, like you were asking, Dave. And there's a huge pile of all the copes, the half rounds, like the start cuts. There's a giant pile. That's going to be campfire wood soon, but they're all 8 feet, 9 feet, 11 feet long. So we have to sit in there with a chainsaw and chop them all up. But where I'm at is really rural. There's no one's hankering to get that. There's no rush to get rid of that stuff. So I'm not.
What about all the sawdust? It just looks like it's going into the gravel.
Yeah, it just goes everywhere. I brought a dust blower with me yesterday and blew some of it away, but it just goes everywhere. In your eyes, you leave. Like, this morning, all my camera equipment, because it blows out wet dust because you have to pump water on the blade to keep it cool. So the dust comes out, it just sticks right to you. If you happen to be by the exhaust port, it just like sticks on you. And you could shake your clothes out, but you have to wash them because with tree sap and everything else, it doesn't come off easy. So this morning, I was wiping off all my camera equipment that I was using out there. Like, sawdust on everything. My car seat is covered with sawdust.
That sounds really fun.
It is.
You're selling it.
The first day we were out there, Mike is squinting the whole time like he's in a dust storm because he didn't bring sunglasses or any. But he since has got like the tight sunglasses, the tight protective Milwaukee glasses to cover the sides of your eye. Because this sawdust blaring, especially up here. It's in the field where we do the sawmill is always windy. So the dust goes out the port and then in every direction on your face and down your neck, everything. It's great. Love it. It's great. No, we got a ton of wood. So I've come it took a minute to get this rhythm, just randomly cutting until we got to the size we want. But now every cut we make is 1 inch. So we end up with all these 1 inch boards to potentially use for anything. They're drying. They're all pine, knotty pine. I'll figure out something to do with them. So we saved them all. And yeah, so that's fun. And what else am I working on? This week I was able to pull a fender off of the donor car and position it in space on the Cadillac. And that was a big hurdle for me. You know, these things come in waves and you think to yourself, I always say it, what is the reason you're not back at it? Why are you not back at it? What's holding you up? And in this case, it was breaking apart the parts car and getting up inside this 75-year-old car and undoing bolts. Most of them broke, so it doesn't matter. Because where it's going, it's getting all refabricated. So the bolts that hold the fender onto the parts car, buried under tar and all that stuff. But I was able to get at each one of them on the one side, and now I got to get on the other side and position them in space and then weld up little flanges to keep the fenders where they go. So that's the next big step, because then I could start really building out the woody sides, because now I know where the fenders are. Mm. And then just keep moving along on that. And this week I'm putting together a video for laser, Aeon Laser. I'm doing 10 laser projects, 10 simple laser projects. Really simple. 10 things you can do on a laser is really more what the title of the video will be. And I'm piecing that together. And then Friday, don't tell anybody, this is a secret. Mm. This weekend I'm going to see the Grateful Dead at the Sphere.
Mm. Really?
Friday, yeah. Friday I'm going. So I'm going to get this video out before we leave Friday morning. Me and Rachel are going to go.
Wow. At the Sphere. Wow.
Yeah. It's going to be. I'm not a deadhead. Rachel is. So I'm taking Rachel for a birthday. But I've been wanting to go to the Sphere just because it's so cool. During the Consumer Electronics Show, my hotel was outside of it. So I got to watch it every night. And it is insane. What a crazy, cool piece of technology that thing is. And so this weekend we'll be inside of it listening to the Grateful Dead. It's a Saturday night show, and then we fly back Sunday, so it's going to be a jam-packed weekend, but it'll be fun.
Yeah. Wow.
I've watched some video about the craziness. The acoustics went inside. It had to be dealt with in a certain way because it's not your normal theater, and so all kinds of crazy engineering, not just on the outside but on the inside, to make it a music venue.
It took me some time to understand what was going on just peripherally, because I never really paid attention to what it was. But the Sphere, if you don't know, is this big giant globe. It has a big huge LED surface all the way around it, so you could project anything on it. You're not really projecting on it, you're showing it on like an LCD screen. And outside at the hotel, outside my window, I watched it for a while because I was there for the weekend. It would turn into the drawings on it make it look like you could see through it in some cases. So sometimes you're looking inside of like a Fabergé egg.
Oh, wow.
And sometimes you're looking inside of a snow globe, even though it's a solid object, but the way they design the graphics, it looks like you're looking into it from every angle. It's so crazy. Like the mental geometry that the graphic designers have come up with. Sometimes they just run simple ads on them. Other times it's a big eyeball, which is probably one of the first graphics they made. And it's this big human eyeball that blinks. It's really gross because it's not attached to a head. It's just an eyeball with like skin on it. It's really disgusting. But that exact thing that you see on the outside is happening on the inside as well. So when you're in it, the experience is fully immersive. When you see an old school concert and there's a giant, like for instance, The Wall. I didn't see The Wall, but I've seen videos of Pink Floyd's The Wall. Behind him is a giant screen, and these things are happening on the screen and some 3D objects in front of it. In this case, the band is sitting there, and everything that emits from behind the stage goes completely up and over and around your head, or comes from around you and goes behind them, everywhere, every 360 degrees, except for your feet. Maybe it is on
crazy.
I haven't been there.
Yeah. What a genius marketing idea to make something that pays for itself through advertising.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To show advertising on the building, but the building is the subject of your attention.
Yeah.
Like I said, just peripherally, I heard that whoever built that, I don't know who did it, he wants to make them in several cities. That's the plan. This was the prototype.
That's interesting, because I think that would cut down the, like, it's so unique that at this point in my life, it's about the only reason I would go to Vegas. You know what I mean? Yeah. So right. If there's one in Chicago, I'm like, I'm never going to Vegas again. I'm just going to go to Chicago or whatever, you know? Yeah. So I don't know. I wonder how much that cost to make, because at some point somebody had to have this idea, this crazy, I'm going to make a ball building that you can light up on the inside and the outside. And I need you to give me money for it. You know what I mean? That happened at some point, and the person was like, well, that sounds like it's going to be really expensive. So they did it. They got money to make it. And then they have all these big profile concerts, and then they have advertising on the outside and stuff. But I wonder how much that costs and how long it's going to take for it to pay for itself. Surely it's not paid for already.
The prototyping, because you got to build some prototypes, and then you have to develop software just for this, because there's no globe or sphere graphic design software or motion design software. So I want to see some of the smaller prototypes.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can find anything about. Okay, so the Las Vegas Sphere Entertainment Venue cost approximately, do you have a guess?
$2.8 billion.
Yeah.
I just
looked it up.
I sent it to us.
Cheater.
2.3. What does it say? What did you see?
It says $2.3 billion.
Yeah. Insane.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. It's the significantly higher than the initial estimate of $1.2 billion. Yeah, I'd say it's a little bit higher.
Wow.
Wow. Somebody's like, I didn't sign up for $2.3 billion. Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's cool. A lot. No overages. Imagine going back to your client and saying, I know I said it was going to be 500, but it's actually going to be a billion. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, right. Another $1 billion, please. Cool. Well, I hope that is fun.
Yeah, that'll be really fun.
How that goes.
That'll be really fun. Like I said, I'm not a huge Deadhead. The only show I ever went to was with Rachel when we first got together. She's been to a lot. She said her first show was when she was 8 years old with a cousin.
Oh, wow.
I think she said she got to see Jerry. So, a long time ago. Anyway, cool. Yeah, that'll be fun. And that's it. And then just onward and upward. Projects inching along.
Cool. David, what you been up to?
Same here. Finishing up the ugly picture frame video, and then starting a pair of bedside table lamps, and they're going to be, this is for the rental, so still working on that, still way behind, but they're going to be kind of like little sculptural lamps where I'm going to play with some shapes. But more excitingly is the my shop. It's like a pitcher's mound, and there's dips and valleys all around the shop, and like huge dips. Like when you walk on, anytime somebody walks in there and walks in the corner, they're like, whoa, this floor is really crooked. And so a company is coming in, and they're going to inject foam underneath the slabs to try to level it out. And that's going to take care of 50% of it, maybe more than that, but it's only going to level it out within itself. There's still going to be dips and valleys because the concrete is a solid object, and the concrete wasn't poured flat. So once, and that's happening, and they said we're still scheduling the date, but that's going to happen within the next few weeks. And then after that gets leveled, I am going to, there's two choices I could do. I could pour a leveling concrete on top of that, which I don't want to do, and the other choice is putting a subfloor in and, you know, wedging things. So we're going to use that I think it's called dry core or something along those lines. Dry core. They're like little chipboard panels, like 2-foot by 2-foot panels, and they got plastic underneath it so it can go onto a concrete floor. And so I'm going to lay all those down and try to level that out as best I can with shims, and then put the carpet tiles back on top of that. And that should all happen within 2 days, 1 day of moving everything out. I don't have the garage door is not functional. The tracks are clipped, so the table saw has to come apart to go through the door. It'll be so worth it, because I'm not doing the shop expansion just yet. It cost a little bit more than I was expecting. So I'm waiting for the right time to do that. So in the meantime, I need to get things leveled. And back when the contractor did all the insulation and added in the attic and the drywall when we first moved in, they asked if I wanted to level the floor. And I was like, I said no. Because at that time, the project was already $20,000. And it was going to be another $3,000 to level the floor. I wish I could go back in time and just say,
get it.
It would have made life so much easier.
Have you considered breaking it out and then just repouring it?
I have not. No.
I don't know if it's possible with drains and stuff. I don't know if there's what's.
There's also electrical on the floor, so so it gets a little bit more complicated with all that. And I don't believe it was poured deep enough because the concrete also moves up and down throughout the seasons. So I built the sliding crosscut table on my table saw, and there's legs on there. Half the season, and I need to remake the legs so they're adjustable because half the season those legs are touching the ground, and the other half of the year the legs are not touching the ground. It's it moves. It's like 3/4 of an inch. The concrete is moving.
That's a lot, man.
So whatever I do, it's not going to be a permanent fix, but it is going to make life a little bit better until we actually do the shop expansion and I move the wood shop back. And then what is currently the wood shop will be the metal shop. But one thing at a time.
So help me understand how this foam thing is going to work. Is the way I'm picturing it, and I'll tell you why I'm doing it wrong, and then you can tell me how it's right. I'm picturing the entire building is a poured slab with the walls built on the edge of the slab. Is that not how it is?
Correct. So there's a slab, and then on the edge of it, I don't know what it's called, I don't know what I'm talking about, but there's also a concrete ledge that goes all the way around the base of the build. So, there's a flat slab.
You might have a foundation, and the slab is inside the foundation, so the slab is independent of the walls, basically. Potentially.
I believe so. Yeah. I remember when the contractor came out to when we first moved in, they tore down the walls and re-insulated everything. It wasn't just on a flat slab. There was a There was a lip all the way around.
All right. So, cinder block foundation raised up for the frost wall or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when the company came out to do the estimate a few days ago, I still have the carpet tiles down. And so, like, we can't actually see where the breaks are within the foundation or if there's any cracks or anything. So there might be some unknowns when they come to do this, but we'll see. And the carpet tile is going back down. I'm still a huge proponent of having carpet in the shop. And a little unknown fact is our camera dolly is not on wheels. It's actually on carpet sliders, and it works better than wheels. It just glides, but there's dips and valleys, and the concrete is so unlevel that every time we go to a different tool to film, we have to re-level the camera. I am so looking forward to not re-leveling the camera for every single shot.
So why, what was the reason for choosing the subfloor versus the leveling
the pour? So if I it's easier and where the garage door is, where the tracks have been clipped, I built a wall and drywall on the back of the inside of the garage door so I could put more insulation in there. And the garage door is insulated, but you could still feel cold air coming through there. So I just put up a little temporary wall. If I was going to re-pour and have everything super flat with a concrete pour, I would have to take that wall down. And I would, if I ever want to turn it back into a normal garage with the moving door and everything, which I do plan on doing when we do the shop expansion, I worry about that lip where it gets poured is going to be up way higher than the outside driveway, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it is.
And then I got to do work on the outside. So this is just the easier route. And plus, I probably could do the pouring myself and the leveling, but I don't want to because there's other things that I want to focus on.
Don't do
so
it.
I would have to have a different.
It's such a messy work.
It's such a messy work. So I would have to hire somebody to do that, but then I have to schedule them to come out when all the tools are moved out of the shop, floor has been leveled. Like I would have to coordinate all these different things, and I can put it in a subfloor in a few hours, I think. Yeah.
Famous last
it's
words.
It's a whole thing. What's that?
I said famous last words. I can do it.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen, there's a guy that you've probably seen him, Dude Dad, he's like on YouTube. He's just like this guy that does like pranks and he builds stuff for his kids and whatever. But one of his like little skits that he does is, it's about a construction company called Couple More Days Construction. And the whole thing is like, he has t-shirts and everything. And it's like, I'm just going to need a couple more days, you know, and that it's pretty funny.
I think I've seen that.
That's
interesting how they developed these techniques to raise up concrete. Yesterday, something came across my feed, and somebody's front stoop had sunk, and their homegrown fix was to buy a trailer hitch that mounts flat. So they took a trailer hitch that mounts flat on something, and instead of that flange being bolted to a frame, for instance, they used tapcons, which are concrete screws, and tapconed it to the side of their poured concrete stoop and then put in a trailer hitch lift. So you plug in like a trailer hitch lift, and this all stuff looks like they could have got it at the trailer store. And they were able to crank it until their stoop, which probably weighs 500-800 pounds worth of concrete, was able to just come up to the level of where it sank from. And they just, in the video, they use a screw gun. So some people might have seen this. It's funny when you know, you talk to your friends and like everybody has seen the same thing.
So how did they get it to stay up there once they lifted it?
They didn't solve that problem. They just showed you how they lifted it.
Okay.
And maybe they left the trailer hitch on the side of the step because it did not look like the most elegant home. They might have been the trailer thing to lift the home. So this was just a step. They just moved it onto the step. I'm not sure.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, this foam stuff, I mean, they can do it in basements, your sidewalk. There's different techniques if it's like a sidewalk or if it's a foundation or whatever, but they just drill tiny little holes and then they inject the foam, and it's like the expanding foam that you use for plugging a hole.
Yeah,
but it can withstand thousands of pounds, and it's supposed to stabilize everything, and we'll see. And it's $3,000 for that, which is cheaper than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how that turns out. I've seen a lot of videos of them, of people doing that with driveways and stuff. Never in a building, but I guess that totally makes sense. Cool. Well, I've been out working on the Ghia this last week and testing out the metal fab. I was talking to you guys about it a little bit before. I went into it expecting the metal fab, which is the laser welder that I got, expecting it to feel like a MIG welder. And I don't know why I thought that, because when you look at it, if you think about it, it's not a MIG welder. It has a very different mechanism. And it certainly feels different. And so it's going to take me a while to get used to it. But I went into it expecting it to be one thing, which was not fair on my part. So I had to kind of readjust while I was testing it out. And I ended up getting some good stuff out of it. But it's... I think I just gave it more credit. That's right. It's weird. I can't, it's not a bad thing that it's not a MIG welder, but I just went into it thinking about it one way and how I was going to move it and how I was going to use it and the space that it would be worthwhile using inside of, like inside the car. And it's just not the same. So
it's not quite as flexible as you would expect.
Yeah. Yeah.
User experience.
So I'm adjusted over the week and ended up, I was able to get some good stuff out of it. Now the cleaning, the rust removal and the surface cleaning and stuff was really cool. I haven't been able to do any cutting yet because my compressor that is powerful enough to feed it the air that it needs, it has another leak in it. This is the second leak in this giant compressor. It's really weird. Like, this little valve just went. And so I've got to track that down and replace that. So I got to test the machine. It took me a while to finally get to a place to where I was able to weld with it in a way that was useful, but I did get there. And I ended up cutting out kind of half of the back end of the Ghia and got about 3/4 of what I cut out put back in. So it's progress, you know, it's wow. moving along. But I still have the other half. So,
you know, Bob, just sorry to interrupt. There's a Ghia in my neighborhood. I keep seeing on Facebook Market for like a couple $100. They say it's a parts car, but it's all there. It's like a 69, maybe green, dark interior. I might get it just for fun. I make it a junkie Ghia, the junkie Ghia. bring it to making it 500.
Mine's gonna be
swing a sledgehammer at it.
Yeah. Well, don't do that. That sounds mean. Yeah, I don't know. I made some progress, but at the same time, this last week I was out there working on it like the entire week, you know, every day, which was nice to actually get ahead on. What, David?
Just a question. Do you enjoy making videos of the Ghia, or would you rather the Ghia be a personal project?
I thought a lot about that this week. When I was
out there. Okay.
Yeah. What I was going to say was I got time to put towards it this week for the first time in a long time. And it every time I get to work on it, I realize again that like I'm still doing metalwork on this car. I'm still doing essentially the same thing in a different spot that I've been doing for the last year or two. I don't know how long I've been working on it. And the video or the feeling of needing to make videos out of it to justify the work on it is the problem. And so it's like I have to try to figure out a way to make it interesting to do the same thing so that I can make another video so that I can make enough money to justify working on it. So it's this weird little circle that and people listening are probably like, no, just work on it. And like I people have told me nice things about they just want to see me make progress. And I get that. That's just not how I work. It's not how my brain works. So I think I would get it. Well, I don't know. It's a catch-22. I think I would get it done faster if I didn't have to make videos, but I also would have a much harder time justifying working on it if I didn't make videos. So
you wouldn't get it done faster.
I probably wouldn't get it done faster, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I go back and forth on that. I have been doing metalwork on it for so long, on and off, not even consistently. Just I've been in that stage for so long that it feels like the entire car, that's all it is. So I haven't gotten to any of the mechanical stuff. I haven't gotten to any of the putting things back. It's all been taking things apart, cutting things away, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not really sure how I feel about it from to your question, like whether it's a hobby video thing.
You have to think that if you were a non-content creator, this would still take this, you know, this would be somebody's lifelong project, or you know, like a 5-year, 10-year project. You know, you work on it when you have time, and I think, you know, we're lucky enough where we can justify time to do these things. But so it's probably going faster for you than it would be for somebody who works a regular 9-to-5 job.
I mean, maybe, yeah, I don't know. It's so inconsistent for me that, you know, somebody who's working on it as a hobby probably puts in an hour or two every weekend, or, you know, a couple nights a week or something. So maybe smaller bits of time more often. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how people do stuff like this as a hobby only around life, because if I tried to do, and I mean, that goes for even like the other projects I do. Like if I wanted to make a new bed, like I made a few weeks ago for our house, I was talking to this guy I know about that. Like, if this wasn't my job, when in the world would I fit in designing and building a bed for myself? Where would you put that in your life? Like, we are incredibly blessed to be able to justify those types of interests and hobbies and time as a job, you know, because I feel for people who want to be able to do that and just literally do not have the hours to do it, which is most people probably. So, yeah, I do think about that a lot. With the Ghia, I mean, I like working on it. I think I'm at a point now where I'm pretty frustrated about the fact that it doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. Even when I make progress on it, it still feels like this endless more sheet metal, more stuff I don't know about, more of the same bad welding, you know, and it's just like, it feels like the same struggle over and over. But and now I actually got confronted with a new worry in this last week. So I was working on the back end of this thing, right? The trunk lid, the engine's in the back, the trunk lid opens and closes, and it goes, and it bends over, like most trunks do. You know, it's a kind of a 90-degree bend-over kind of thing. So when it's closed, it comes down and meets the pieces that I'm currently cutting out and replacing. So I started cutting them out and realized, yes, I should put the trunk lid back on to make sure that when I put these pieces back in, they are going to line up with, you know. So I did that, and that was good. But while I was doing that, I was like, you know what? I never really tested the doors. Uh-oh. I should probably put the doors back on just to make sure. I've just been kind of like avoiding that when I was doing the side work to, you know. So I put one of the doors back on. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really fit. It kind of fits. It's like, it's close.
Give yourself a hand plane for metal.
Well, I got it in place, and it's not, the hinges aren't even like fully tight, and they're not seated in the right spot. So there's still some adjustment that you can do there and everything. But the problem or the potential thing I'm going to have to figure out how to deal with is it's rubbing on, so you think about the hinge side of the door. The opposite side, the end where the handle is, it's rubbing there, which means my gap for the door probably got a little bit smaller. Yeah. And I knew that was a potential, and I measured, and I did a bunch of stuff to try to avoid that from happening, but what I really should have done is kept the doors on when I put that all of that stuff back together and, like, forced my gap there and everything. And it's just one of those things, I guess, you learn by doing it wrong, but it's a pretty big thing to have to overcome later. So I haven't put the other one on to know if it's all right. And the rubbing between these two surfaces is not like I can push the door closed. So it does fit in there. It's not that I can't close the door, but it rubs. So I think it'll probably be a case of getting a hammer out and just trying to reshape the parts that rub enough to not rub, you know.
Did you hear it? Hear all those car guys punch their computer just now?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, but like whatever. It's my fix, my car.
I don't know the circumstances, but one fix could be where you just put a couple of relief cuts, wedge it open. Relief cuts maybe right across the threshold. I don't know where, because I don't know the car particularly, but yeah. Put a couple of relief cuts here and there. Wedge wood or something to keep that gap where you want it, then re-weld those relief cuts. Just an idea. Oh. Huh.
Yeah. There's a lot going on down there. I mean, you got like heater channels wrapped in rocker panel, and so it's not a matter of there being... Yeah. You would have to weld things on the inside of all that to get
that. You
could
also... This is crazy, and this is going to upset a lot of people. You could put a relief cut right behind the door belt and tap it in and then close that weld. So... like right where the door jam, like if this is the part that swings, and then this is the part that's attached to the car, so the door would swing into this, put a relief cut here and bang it back a little bit so that it opens up a little bit.
See, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you could do like that, but yeah. Every adjustment that you make then is
going to
be
something else.
It's going to compound up into where the windows are.
Then you have to grind your windows skinny.
Yeah, you can't cut your windows. Like, I'm not going to do that. So I think the safer thing is to focus... And I haven't really thought too far down this road, so I don't know what I'm going to do yet. But I think the safer thing is to keep the top, to worry about where the door and the windows and that body shape up there meet. Because the problem is on the bottom of the door. So if I can get the top of the door right, then I can like either relief cut and knock in the bottom of the door. And this is not the skin that you see on the outside. This is the inside part that hits the sill. So you don't even like see it, you know. But I think I can do work down there. Either you're muted, Jimmy.
Yeah, I was saying, get a hammer with a pointy end, so you can just like ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, yeah. So I think working down there will probably make it. Like, I'm not terribly worried about it because I can shut the door. So that was the that was the problem. If it was like, oh, my door's an inch too long, then I'm just going to burn the whole place down and start over.
But well, you go to school on the first one. Someone says.
You go to school on the first Kia.
I think stuff like that is like, you know, it was an oversight. Totally my fault. Like, I own that. But that oversight a year ago or whatever is now going to create a whole nother set of work that I have to do once I get the rest of the body in place. You know, it's just another thing that I have to adjust and whatever. I mean, I'll make it as I go. I just, it feels at this point like something that was never going to end. I'm just going to be doing the Ghia for the rest of my life and never actually drive it. But
is there a part that you're looking forward to, like upholstery or interior or painting?
I think, I think getting it painted is something I'm looking forward to. Except the fact that once I paint it, I'll probably start seeing all the flaws that I didn't, you know, that I was too impatient to fix in the bodywork period. Mm-hmm. Now,
yeah,
so I'm a little bit worried about that, and I know that, so I'm trying to make sure I take my time with the bodywork. But I'm looking forward to putting it back together. I'm looking forward to like having it painted. I have new, like, I got a new wiring harness. I have new interior pieces, and I have new, all of the stuff or refurbished pieces that I was able to clean. And I'm looking forward to like putting that back together and start building it up a little bit. That feels pretty far from now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but that's what I've been out doing this week. And it did feel good to be out there. It was absolutely beautiful weather. So I had that big door open. It's like kind of breezy and mid 60s, low 70s all week. Just wonderful weather to be out there. So that was great, and I would like to do more of that before it starts getting super hot. You know. And one interesting thing, and part of why I did this deal with Xtool about this metal fab thing, is they wanted several videos to use this thing. And it was like, well, if I commit to several videos with them about this thing, then that commits me to some sort of metal work, which makes sense for it to be the Ghia a lot, several times over the summer, you know. So there was a little bit of like built-in commitment there to making some progress.
Xtool is your accountability partner.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
Accountability buddy.
Accountability buddy. Yeah.
I can't even say that.
That's what I've been working on. And then I started working on a new project this week, but we'll get to that later on. It's not terribly right. Interesting.
Bob, you put out the video of I saw your Instagram story where the extruder for the edge banding.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how did that video do? I'm just curious if that struck any urban people.
It actually did pretty well. Every time I put a video out, I'm reminded about how little I understand about YouTube. Every single time.
Of course. Same.
It gets crazy. In this one, I remember specifically thinking, like, we have to name this something that does not say edge banding because nobody's going to watch this. Like, it's interesting to me, but nobody's going to watch this. And it's still number 2 out of 10.
Mm, that's great.
Okay. I'll take it, you know.
You know, it's funny. I did a video about the Harvey bandsaw, which I published this week, Monday. And it's funny how so many people still like, I just watched a 10-minute commercial. I'm like, yeah, that's what it says in the title.
Yeah.
It says, and then when you know, I'm sure, I don't remember if I did, but I'm sure I clicked, you're watching an advertisement. You know, you have to tell YouTube that this is a sponsored video. So it pops up right in the beginning. And it's like, you've changed. I miss the guy that was in the basement in New York. What, in the basement of New York selling tools? It's different now? This is what I've always done. I said, I use tools on camera and people potentially buy them. That's been my job since the beginning.
I know we've talked about this, but that phrase, you've changed, has gotten hurled at us, not just us, like people. It gets hurled at people as a negative thing. Mm-hmm. And my response to that would be, well, if I didn't, that would be bad. If I don't change in some ways over time, then shame on me. Like, yeah. That's sad. You know,
if I say it often. I'd be like, let's put a pin in this and let's see where you're at in 14 years from now. And if you're still in the exact same spot, there's something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, not all change is good. Like, I understand that. But dang, if you shouldn't. Yeah. Anyway.
You've changed.
Yeah, I have. On purpose. Mm-hmm. How about that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had a question for you guys. We did have kind of a topic, but I was thinking about something. I had a couple of things, actually. One, I want to run back real quick to, you said when you were talking about your shop earlier, you talked about the center of it being a pitcher's mound. I know you like baseball, right? You've watched baseball, right?
I used to be a huge baseball fan. I've stopped watching, but that's
what I thought. I don't like baseball. I went to a baseball game for my daughter's boyfriend the other day, and he's really good at it. But man, baseball is not a thing I enjoy watching. But while I was watching it, I noticed for the first time, this is like the third baseball game I've ever seen in my life. So I noticed the pitcher's mound is a literal mound. I always thought that was just kind of like the phrase for the thing that they stand on and it like whatever. But it's a mound. It's like a foot or two higher than the rest of the field. And that struck me for the first time ever. And so I started asking the other dads there that were actual baseball dads, like, why is that a mound? Why is it lifted up? And nobody had an answer to it. And then this one of the grandpas came over who's like super baseball guy, knows all of the stuff about all of the things. And somebody asked him. And so he laid out this whole explanation as to like the physics of why it's a mound and why the pitcher gets a better angle on it makes it more difficult for the hitter. No, it makes it easier for the hitter and more difficult for the pitcher because the hitter gets to see the angle of approach differently than if it were coming straight at them. So if you're on the same plane and the ball's coming straight at you, you can't judge it the same as if it's coming at an angle. You can see the change, you know. And that was fascinating. Like, I sat through this whole boring baseball game and then had this simple question and somebody had a really interesting answer to it. I just thought that was kind of cool. I didn't know if you knew that or not.
I did not know that. Yeah, the only sport I watch anymore is F1, and just because there's only so much time, and so I just eliminated all sports except for F1. And Kelly's also into F1, and what got her into that? There's a few reasons, but she would just be in the room as I'm watching it, but then she would start picking up on the science behind things and the reasoning and the strategy. And it's more than just one race. It's a whole season. And she really got into that. And I think, once you find that little fascinating bit, you can, it hooks you and it just makes the whole, like baseball, it's really hard to watch one baseball game or two baseball games a year because you don't understand the whole story. There's 162 games a year. There's you knew that this player got called up 3 weeks ago and is known for this skill, which somebody got, you know, like there's more than just that game. There's the whole story and how we got to that point. And so baseball is better when you follow it every single day.
Interesting.
You guys reminded me, since we were on baseball for a second, did I ever tell you the time I went to a baseball game with Nick Offerman's dad? Did I tell you guys that story?
I don't think so.
So it was a few weeks after I cut my hand because I was still in a cast. It was the spring of 2010, and Nick calls me out of nowhere and says, I was scheduled to be in the city and meet my parents, but things have changed and I won't be able to. He said, would you be so kind as to meet my parents and escort them to the Yankee game? I said, that would be fun. So I met Nick's mom and dad in front of the Museum of Natural History, and we got in a cab and then the subway ride, and we ended up in Yankee Stadium. And Nick's dad is so funny because he's like, what do you know about baseball? I go, absolutely nothing. So I sat there and I can't remember who was playing, but he went through everybody. He knew so much about everything. He's obviously a huge baseball fan. And this was a real big deal for him to see the Yankees live. And it was really a wonderful day. I got a picture of it somewhere. And he just was so happy to tell me everything about baseball. It was like, I was like a 5 year old and he was like a dad again, teaching the kid all about baseball. I was really interested because he knew so much about it. He was so informed, telling me about everyone that came up. He knew each baseball player's stats. It was a really, It was a perfect day. That was it. That was
nice.
This grandfather that was talking to me was kind of the same way. Like, I got a little interested just because he was so excited about it. And when I asked him about the mound, he immediately started telling me about how, in 1967, there was so-and-so that used to pitch from the mound, and they had like a 95% strike rate or something, and that it was too good, and so they had to, like, and at that point, the mound was like 4 feet tall, and they had to lower the mound, and, you know, he, like, had all this information, player names and, like, stats and all this stuff, and that was kind of interesting to see somebody as passionate about something that I don't really know anything about, you know, so I kind of felt the same way. Anyway, that was one little topic. The other question I had for you guys is this next year, or this current year, I guess. We're not at the beginning of the year anymore. Do you have any planned projects that are, like, bigger than normal, different than normal? Are you thinking ahead towards... Because I have one that we're hopefully going to start in the fall or so that is new for me. It's like a new... everything. Do you have anything like that you're planning? Maybe even not even this year. Do you have something in your future that you are starting to plan?
My giant band, so I want to build its own independent home. So I'm going to build in the backyard. I'm going to build and the plan is to use the sawmill to cut up the wood for it. So I'm building I want to build like a 10 by 10 or maybe like a 15 by 20 foot little barn just for the bandsaw as like its own sawmill location. Not the sawmill itself, but the bandsaw. So it's almost, it's like a museum piece in a building, but it totally usable. So that's a long-term plan. And the porch poles are a long-term plan that I started cutting up. That's why all the sawmill videos of me cutting and prepping the porch poles. And there's a few more, a couple car projects.
Is there anything different about those car projects than, I mean, like, obviously you're making the Woody right now. That's a pretty big deal, but.
Yeah. This is stupid. So I've acquired two Cadillacs that I don't do anything with because they're just too far gone. So they're just lawn ornaments. So I might take them and make East Durham its own version of Marfa, Texas with the Cadillac Ranch. So one of my properties is along the road a little bit. You got to look through my neighbor's yard to see it, but I might, in my big cow pasture, which is about 3 or 4 acres along, I might stand up to the two Cadillacs I have, just have them standing out of the ground, so it looks like they're shooting up out of the ground. And I was talking to Eli. He's my guy who uses the backhoe around here the most. Eli does all my groundwork. And he says, what are we going to do with that Cadillac when you're done pulling parts off? And I go, I don't know. Maybe we'll just plant it in the ground, pointing at the sky. And he goes, that'll be fun. It's like, just like a local, he's like a local yokel. And so I have the 46 Cadillac and I also have the 67 Cadillac, which that was a project I started that went away. So those are two long-term projects, art project and then a practical one.
Yeah. You know, do you have anything like that?
Nothing too crazy or different. As far as like a big project that I want to do this year is redo my office, and I'm waiting for a couple pieces of music equipment when the time is right for me to get those pieces and sell other pieces. I want to redo this whole half of this office where it's kind of like a spaceship console where everything kind of works and flows in together. Got, you know, my printers and my computer area and a music area and a book area. And it's not just one little project. It's almost like a room transformation. Part of that sounds overwhelming to me, but I think once I just start drawing and once I get into it, I'll just do it. But it's not really that different from all the other little projects that I do. It's a bunch of little projects that it will turn into a bigger one. There's one other thing, and it has lit the fire for me to work on some art. I was at an event over the weekend, and this gallery, it's more of like a DIY punk type gallery, but it is an art gallery, and they have shows there all summer and He's like, hey, let me know when you're ready to show your work. And we'll set up a date. And this is my dream. This is the thing that I've been wanting to do for a while. And I was like, and he's like, you know, if you wanted to do it here. And I'm like, no, this is the place where I want my first gallery showing to be. And so, over the weekend, I started collecting. I've got random notes and sketches. I got half started pieces over here. I've got illustrator drawings, and I just started collecting them. I put them all in a pile, and for my first showing, I want to have different categories. Instead of having one cohesive, like all the pieces are somewhat related, I'm going to have different sections. Like there's going to be like a little sculptural section. There's going to be almost like a hanging wall phrase type thing, and then another little geometric thing over here. And I started like, okay, I have four ideas for this. I have two ideas for this. I'm going to need some more there. This is something I want. So I've been just collecting what I want to work towards, and hardly any of that is going to be filmed, but I don't want the filming to slow this process down, and those videos wouldn't do well anyway, at least I don't think. And so that is something that it is a little bit different, and it's something that I'm working towards, and is a bigger thing, because again, it's just a bunch of little things that turns into a bigger thing.
Gotcha. That's pretty exciting.
It's really it's I'm so excited. I'm more excited than I should be, I think. It's funny that we brought this up. So my buddy Jonathan Ransom, who runs my Discord, I didn't tell anybody this. Only
awesome
Kelly
guy,
knew.
By the way,
yeah, awesome guy. Yes, I didn't tell anybody this, except for, you know, Kelly was there when we had this conversation. He sends me a message on Discord the other day. He's like, it looks like that Petruto Gallery show is going to happen sooner than expected. And I was like, wait, what? What are you talking about? And he's like, oh, you haven't seen Laura Comp's video yet?
Yeah, Laura's video is cool.
And she's opening up she's going to start a gallery in LA. And I had not seen the video yet. And so I was like, oh, that's such a weird coincidence. I thought you were inside my brain, reading my mind because of, you know. But anyway, so that is something I'm working towards. Now I'm very curious on where that question comes from, Bob.
Well, first off, it is 5 hours and 8 minutes to Toledo. So you let me know when your opening is, and I'm there. I'm definitely
man.
Coming to that.
I love you.
That's cool.
Thank you.
That's cool. Yeah. It's coming from...
Man.
Yeah, I said it first. You're just doing it because I'm doing it.
No, you're going to make me cry on that, the podcast.
That'll be the 500th episode.
Yeah, there you go. I need to watch Laura's video. I didn't know she was doing that. The question comes from... So, you know, I've been talking about the A-frame forever. And recently I've gone back and forth on whether it's something like realistically something I will ever do or not. And one of the reasons that it's kind of daunting, well, I mean, it's a home, but I've never built, of all the things that I've built, I've never built a freestanding structure from the ground up. I've made a bunch of climbing walls. I've built giant decks. I've, you know, renovated things. I've whatever, but I've not started with a flat surface and ended up with a thing that has doors and windows and a roof and like keeps animals out. And so looking at jumping from not having done any of that to like making an A-frame that looks awesome and is big and whatever, that's a pretty big leap. So we've been talking for, excuse me, a long time about making Jenny a pottery shed, like a studio in our backyard. And we're still talking about we're adjusting what that is, but, and maybe whether it's for pottery or not, but we're still talking about building this shed. And I started to go like, well, I could probably just buy one that fits where we want it and have it trucked in. And I'm like, yeah, but this is like practice. Building a small structure, top to bottom, bottom to top, you can't build down. Building bottom to top would be practice and would help me answer a lot of the questions for what I would need to understand about building the A-frame at some point. So maybe I'm in my 50s, I'm in my 60s, and I decide to do the A-frame. At least I've got a structure under my belt. And so looking ahead at just building a shed, it doesn't, when you say it like that, it doesn't feel like it's that big of a deal. And I've watched other people build sheds, but it's a new thing for me. It's a new step from renovation, fix, build a new wall and a structure that's already there to we got to do it right from the ground up. And, you know, so that's one of the big things that I'm looking at, hopefully in the fall, is starting to do this thing, maybe even over the summer. I don't know exactly when. I don't want to design it myself. I want to start. I don't want to like buy plans for a shed. I want to design it for the space that we have, for what we want to use it for, but the aesthetic, you know, and all that stuff. So there's a lot of design that I don't, I mean, I can use Fusion, but designing a building in Fusion has to be done a certain way, that so that you can physically make it. And, you know, so there's a lot to that whole process that feels new to me. And I'm excited about it, but it, you know, it is a different thing for me. And I also have to figure out another different thing for that is how do I go about making videos about making a thing that I've never made before that's that scale, right? So I was thinking about this with the Ghia last week, is I've got to get myself out of the feeling that I have to have completed thoughts when it comes to the Ghia videos. Like, don't have to be a start-to-finish section. It can just be progress. And this new video that's coming out is just progress. Whoa. My wife just texted me that one of my ex-girlfriends came into the place that she works today.
She's coming for dinner.
That threw me a little bit. Sorry. Yeah, she and my wife are probably best friends now, knowing her. I wonder who that was. Interesting. Anyway, I grew up here, so I haven't had a girlfriend here since I was in high school. So, you know, well, anyway. I totally lost my train of thought. What was I talking about?
We all forgot.
I don't know. Building plans.
Building from scratch.
Yeah. Well, yeah. How to approach the YouTube thing. Yeah.
Complete the YouTube thing. Yeah. So I'm beginning to talk myself out of like having Ghia videos have to be like, this whole section is done. It's just not realistic. And it's hard. Yeah.
Same thoughts with the house and my car video. Same thing. It's like progress is progress.
So I got to figure out how to make a story about progress.
My goal is always just to show some transformation. It doesn't have to be a completed transformation, but it's transformation. It's like, it was this, now it's that. It might not be done, but it's completely different than what it was.
Yeah. So that's the thing I'm working on is how to do that. Plus starting to design whatever this building is going to look like and have available in it.
It's going to be more utilitarian, but still also with a lean towards some interesting design.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm going to do anything outlandish or anything design-wise, but I'm still doing it from scratch. So I have to pick the aesthetic. You know, I think we're going to do kind of just a nice-looking kind of mid-mod, single-pitch, shed. But we wanted to have a lot of windows. I've already bought a door and certain windows a long time ago when we were going to build it, and it was going to be in a different place and serve a different purpose. So I'm also building it around the windows and door that I already have, which is kind of weird. Like, that's not ideal, but I just want the outside of it to fit in our backyard and look nice, and you know, so there's that. But that was my thought. That's where that question came from.
Yeah,
because I'm planning that.
What is your thought on talking about future projects that may or may not happen?
I mean, I typically avoid it.
I know. I've mentioned so many things that I want to do, and then I'm like, I'm going to do this thing, and then I end up not doing it, and I feel bad for putting it out there that I didn't get to it, that I'm disappointing somebody, but nobody really cares what I'm going to do in the future. People are watching what I'm doing now. And so I keep having this thought of like, I should stop talking about future projects and just talk about what I'm finishing up or what I'm working on. But I get too excited about the future. Or maybe not too excited, but I am very excited about future things. And so I bring them up. And part of me is saying to myself, if I talk about this thing, if I say, hey, I'm going to do this art gallery show, I'm putting it out there, and now it's real because other people know about it. But it also adds pressure because, like, am I doing it for myself or am I doing it for an audience? And I don't want to do it for an audience. I want to do it for myself. But I don't know. Internal struggles. My head is a tennis match all the time on this stuff.
Oh, man, that's a good phrase. And that's I feel that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, future stuff, I think I think both of us, at least, I don't know about Jimmy, but both of us probably only talk about future idea things here on this show. I don't talk about it anywhere else. And right. I know that the people that listen to this are probably the most gracious group of people that we interact with on the internet. So I think they give us the, you know, some grace when we don't follow through on that stuff. They're excited to hear about the potential, but... I do think it's good because it gives the three of us at least opportunity to encourage each other towards those things. Because, I mean, I know that for both of you, having a gallery show is like a goal.
And yeah, Rachel that, keeps pushing
I think
me
would
to
be
that
awesome for you as artists. So, like, anything I could do to encourage that along or whatever, I mean, absolutely. You know, there's I would rather also know about it than not know about it.
Right. There's also the – if I say, hey, I'm going to – make a treasure chest or a cabinet or whatever I'm going to make. I'm going to do that in a couple weeks. And it's going to be this for this specific thing. You guys both will be like, oh, have you thought about doing this? And I'm like, ooh, I have not thought about doing that, but I, you know, it's, so there's the brainstorming part. That's always fun too, or getting somebody else's perspective
before I dive into a project. One giant group show somewhere in the world. Maybe if we had an event to attach it to, like 500th episode, giant group
not
show.
Not 500th episode is too soon.
Oh, man.
But, you know, that would be really cool. I would enjoy that greatly.
Giant group show. Everybody bring one piece.
Cool.
The look on Bob's face. As I was saying it, he was almost going to hang up on us.
Speaking of 500, we're running long, but our 500 kind of conversation from last week took an interesting turn. Let's talk about that in the after show.
Yeah.
Oh, we can tell people about that.
Timing couldn't have been better.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. Let me thank our Patreon supporters for hanging out with us today and for, you know, encouraging us along on our future project ideas and stuff. We are very grateful for all the support for everybody over at Patreon at every level. It's awesome. So big thank you to everybody, but especially our top supporters. That is A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Matthias Garnow, Crabtree Creative, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Design, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, Corey Ward, and Nick Ryan. But also people like Dan Edwards. Dan Edwards has been supporting us for a very long time on Patreon, and we appreciate that, Dan.
Thank you.
If you want to get the after show, which is where we're going to talk about this new development for for the 500 meetup thing, you can go to patreon.com/makingit, join up at any level, and you get the after show. It's a separate podcast feed. The link is available on Patreon after you sign up. And you can find out more about that and hear more of us jibber jabber every week. And if not, then that's cool. Just thanks for being here and listening. We appreciate it. All right. Do you guys have anything to recommend?
I'm going
to
say first.
And does somebody have an extra for me? Because I don't watch anything.
Mine's so good.
Casey Neistat put out a video.
Oh, okay.
Sean tipped me off to it. I would have seen it because I'm in his feed. But thank you, Sean, for the quick tip. Casey put out a video on the new version number 5 of the 360 camera from 360, Insta360.
Insta360.
It's pretty good. It's always nice to see a Casey video. He's just, you know, his videos are just so likable. And he went over the details. It was interesting. And he kind of turned it into a little bit of a history lesson, which was very cool. So the Insta360... They reached out to me, and I passed them on to Mark's, but Mark must have pissed them off because I never heard from them, but they reached out to me. And the timing gives me the indication it probably would have been for this introduction because it was about 2 months ago they reached out. And I don't know. Sometimes Mark gets people in a headlock, and they can't breathe, and then they go away. And then I meet him at a trade show, and they're like, I spoke to your agent, and he really wanted a lot of money. I'm like, yeah, you should have called me first. But anyway, so Insta360, and I've been playing around with my Insta360 Ace Pro, the first version. Mm-hmm. I kind of, you know, you drift from camera to camera as you go. You start getting comfortable with this one and that one. And I drifted away for the Osmo, what is this one with the head?
Pocket 3.
And I just started using the Ace again. I really like that camera.
Yeah.
Mine's a little beat up at this point. I've dropped it and the corners are chipped, but it's still a good camera. So anyway, that's it. That's my ad. Unpaid ad for Insta360.
When I watched Casey's video yesterday, I was like, that is such a great product video. Without talking about specs or else who's going to put out that Insta360 video is going to talk about this spec and how it compares. He doesn't do any of that. He has
innovations, the changeable lenses and the handle. That was it. Those really are the two big pain in the asses. Why I always I panic when I carry my Insta360. I got the 4. If I can't find the rubber tip that goes over the end, I'm panicking because I'm like, I'm holding it in my hand the whole time so you don't put it down and scratch the bulbs.
Yeah. All right. This might be my favorite pick of all time. This one is so good.
Whoa.
It is a website app called Canopy. And if you have a library account, it's free. And it's movies. It's all movies. Hit movies, classic movies, but my favorite thing about this is the documentary section on Canopy. There are so many artist documentaries on here, all the big ones, and it's completely free, and it is blowing my mind that I did not know about this sooner. So, Canopy, absolutely amazing.
Canopy with a K.
Canopy with a K.
Is that right? Okay.
Yep.
Huh. Interesting. All right, cool. I'll have to check that out. I don't have a pick because I don't ever watch anything. Why don't I ever watch anything? I just don't.
Why don't you take Laura's video and then preemptively?
Okay. I mean, I like Laura a lot, so yes. Whatever Laura's video was about, that's going to be my pick, and I'm going to go watch it.
Laura's opening a gallery called Bricks.
Why didn't I see this? I do look at YouTube, and I watch the things that I didn't see that pop up. But anyway, yes. Go check out Laura's video, and I'll put a link to it.
I tried to help you out last week, Bob.
You did, okay, and go. I still haven't watched the OK Go video.
OK Go video is so cool with the robot arms.
Yeah, and that wasn't even my pick. My pick was with Jack Conte interviewing the singer of OK Go on how the video was made. That interview it's so good because it's not about the technicalities of it, it's about the art of it and how the ideas come about. It's such a
great idea. Basically, it's not about robot arms as much as it's about reflections, which is so cool.
Interesting.
Oh, and maybe I'll talk about this in the after show. A robot arm company reached out to me, and I almost sent it to you, Jimmy. a tiny little robot arm, not like the big massive ones that will kill you.
Yeah, I need one. There's one on a bandsaw that everyone keeps sending to me. There's a robot arm with a bandsaw, and everyone keeps sending it to me. It's really
It has a cool. bandsaw at the end of the robot arm? Yes. Oh, man.
So, I don't know how. Whoever made it seems like they would be using it for cutting. Because the demo is just like weird sculptural stuff. It's not really anything tangibly usable. But I would imagine you could use it for making, like, corbels and stuff like that for big timber frame stuff.
It just reminds me of the laser bandsaw that you came up with 5 years ago.
Yeah, that I never
finished. Just the laser coming from the ceiling and you just freehand through it.
What could go wrong? Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate it. Yeah. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
Love you. Bye. Thank you.